All right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I got a guest today, which you can't see. He's a man of mystery. Tyson Fisher is going to jump on the podcast with me today. I met Tyson today for the first time, actually, but he dropped me some DMs via Instagram to ask me some archery questions. And we chit-chatted a little bit, and then he followed up with some pictures of a successful buffalo hunt that he just had. And I believe it was the Henrys, but I'm going to ask him about it here in Utah. But since archery buffalo hunting is probably something that I'll never get to do because I'm too behind the curve at this point, it's a pipe dream, if you will, for me. But it's something like I would really love to do. And so I wanted to, you know, I thought it'd be fun to actually get Tyson on, somebody that's just recently done it, and kind of hear his hunting story and just talk shop. So he was kind enough to jump on with me. Before I get going, I got to hit promo. So promo code GAMETRAIL. If you want to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account, you can use that promo code GAMETRAIL and you're going to get $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. You can use that towards the purchase of anything that you want in the shop. Also, for anybody that is a member already, if you want to use my promo code GAMETRAIL when you're shopping there at our gear shop, you're going to save yourself 10% on pretty much every brand. Also, shout out to Matthews Archery as a sponsor of the podcast. Appreciate those guys. I do appreciate Matthews. I'm going to run out and shoot some arrows hopefully tonight. With that, I'm going to jump on with Tyson. Tyson, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Gotcha. I got you loud and clear. So we actually started a little bit earlier, and we found that we weren't able to do video and audio at the same time. I think it might be my internet connection maybe, or it might be his. I'm not sure, but as long as I can hear you loud and clear, how's things? Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
I'm from St. George, Utah. Born and raised down here.
Gotcha. Sunny St. George.
Yeah.
What's the temperature down there today?
60, I think. 60. 55, 60. Yeah, I was in a t-shirt all day working.
No way. Do you ever get sick of that?
Yeah, actually. It's kind of funny. We didn't even have like hoodie weather this year. Like it's just abnormally warm.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Been warm, man. We haven't had any snow in ages. It's a little depressing, to be honest, but hopefully we get, seems like every year March has been like our new wet snow month of the year. So hopefully we get some snow in March. It'd be good to see.
Yeah. As soon as the elkhorns start hitting the ground, it's going to start dumping snow on us.
Dude, every year, this is exactly what happens. Like as soon as I get excited about shed hunting, you know, and it's like maybe creeping up on like the 10th of March or something, and I think I got a spare weekend that I can run out, inevitably we're going to get like 2 feet.
Oh yeah. Then you can't get anywhere.
Yeah. And then any of those big early droppers are buried.
Oh yeah. Or already picked up. Jeez.
Or picked up. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a bunch of go getters. That's for sure.
For sure. So, you married, you got kids?
Yeah, I'm married. Been married for 2.5 years.
Gotcha.
Got a little boy, our first, back in June.
Very cool. How's that going?
He's a handful, but it's good. It's
yeah.
The hardest thing I've ever done, but the best thing I've ever done. So.
Yeah, dude, their kids are great. My youngest is 12. My oldest is 20, which is hard to fathom. I can't. I mean, I'm old, but when I think about having an 18-month-old or something like that, I can't hardly fathom it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But they're a ton of fun.
Yeah, we're in the no sleep stage right now. He's learning everything, so
yeah,
going.
Yeah, wait till they get a little bit older and they start playing sports and doing stuff like that. It's like I had a guy hit me up today and he was like, "Hey, are you gonna come up and shoot the Utah Open archery shoot?" And I was like, "Man, I would love to, but every time I look at my calendar, I've got a kid somewhere, either doing some sort of activity or sport. So it's just like every weekend is filled up, which is good, keeps me busy, and it's fun to watch them do their thing for sure."
Oh yeah. Yeah. My parents, they followed us all over the place, and my dad used to hunt like crazy. And those years I kind of feel bad for him. It's like we took, a lot of years of his hunting and career just mm-hmm. from wanting to be, on the other side of the country playing sports between
for
me
sure.
and my sisters. But
yeah, crazy. I want to ask you about how you got into hunting, but before I do it, I did a little background search. I was just reading up. I did a Google search. Usually if I have a podcast guest that I'm not really that familiar with, I try to do a little bit of research, just kind of figure out who this person is. But a lot of people, there's not like maybe a ton out there. But when I Googled your name, you were kind of a big deal when it comes to baseball, huh?
I wouldn't say big deal, but yeah, I played a lot of it.
Dude, I would say in our neck of the woods, it's a big deal. So I pulled this. I hope you don't mind me reading it. So I pulled this from one of the newspapers. So it says, Dixie High's Tyson Fisher, the 2018 Deseret News Mr. Baseball. So is there a, is it, were you like Mr. Baseball of the state of Utah in 2018?
Yeah. Yeah. I had to go up to Salt Lake and do a photo shoot and get out of my comfort zone and everything for that Mr. Baseball stuff. It was kind of crazy.
I bet you love that.
Oh, I love the cameras, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. But I was pretty impressed. I mean, it said you hit 512 in 2018, 33 RBIs, 9 home runs, which tied for tops in the state of Utah. It said you led Dixie to consecutive region and Utah state titles and named the 2018 state tourney MVP, which is super cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. High school was a lot of fun.
Do you look back on that pretty fondly?
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a cliche of like high school baseball is the best baseball. Mm. And I never believed it until I was in college. And then it was like, man, I'd do anything to go back to high school. Like
really?
Oh, high school baseball was the most fun. It was, you just get to be yourself, man. You don't have, there's no pressure to it. It's just, let's go out there and play baseball. You get to college. It's like
It's a business. It's a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played baseball in high school, so I played first base. And I think I was telling you earlier, I hit 420, I think, my senior year. We took state my senior year. And I went to a tiny high school, right? So nobody from, you know, my 1A division gets ever looked at to play collegiately. And I went down to Dixie, and I looked into, like, walking on to, you know, play baseball at Dixie. And I thought, man, that'd be a fun thing. And then I started talking to some of those guys and just the regime that you guys are under, right? So like the gym time, the practice schedules, all that involves, I was like, I don't think I want any part of that. I just want to be a normal college student.
Oh yeah. No, it's a full-time job. Like try and sneak in a day of hunting and you're not sleeping if you want to try and do other stuff other than baseball and class.
Basically. Yeah. What position did you play in the field?
So I played third base, and then a bunch of scouts said, if I play the outfield, it'll help my draft stock. So I moved to the outfield my sophomore year of college, played right field for the last 2.5 years of my baseball career.
How long did you play at Dixie?
I played it there 5 years, 5 seasons, well, 4.5, because COVID took like the majority of our season in 2020. Oh, so man. I got that year back. And that was my big draft year, and it really screwed me up. But looking back, you know, it's a good thing. Like, I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for that. I'd probably be making pennies playing minor league baseball. So,
you said earlier you got drafted out of high school?
Yeah, yeah. So the Orioles wanted to take me in the 17th. And I turned it down thinking, you know, bet on yourself, go make more money, get drafted higher. And it was going to happen. Just COVID happened and a lot of people's lives changed. But
yeah.
For the better, I guess.
Yeah, COVID, what a deal. How do you feel looking back on it? Do you feel, I mean, you can't go back in time, but do you wish that you would have taken the draft pick? Or are you like satisfied with going to college?
And just like... There's mixed feelings about it. Like, it would have been cool to say I played professional baseball, but where I would probably be at, if it didn't work out, would be a lot worse than where I am now. So
right.
I don't know. It's give and take. I always tell my wife when we're talking baseball, I'm like, I wish I would have just played football instead of baseball. Because baseball, there's no full rides. So you're, no matter where you go, like you're paying something, and football is 100% full ride.
Right.
I had a bunch of those scholarships too, and I should have just, I always think, man, I probably would have been better off playing football. But
what position did you play in football?
Defensive end.
Gotcha. And you had offers to play college football too?
Yeah. Yeah. I had, I don't know, a dozen or so.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun memories. And I don't know, man, it's impressive. I'm always impressed by anybody that can do something at the level. You know, that it takes to get to a D1 school, and then, you know, obviously potentially professionally, it just takes an incredible amount of work and dedication. It's just fun to, fun to talk to somebody that's got both the talent and the drive, you know, to do something like that. And I'm sure it kind of pushes you into kind of your hobby, if you will, of hunting. You probably take a lot of the same mindset from sports that you grew up with, and the amount of level of effort that it takes into hunting. But I wanted to ask you, like, how did you get into hunting? Have you always been into hunting? You said that your dad hunted, but did you always hunted?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we grew up hunting. My dad was awesome about like getting us involved. So like from the time I was two, that's all we did. Like weekends we were going up on the mountain looking for stuff, or going to the cabin, or, you know, anything really in the mountains. And I always said I'm going to play professional baseball or professional football, make enough money to retire and just hunt the rest of my life. Right. That was like the goal. And I mean, obviously I didn't get there, but yeah, it's always been hunting. I mean, that's what our family did. It was, you want to go to Disneyland or do you want to go to Fish Lake and go fishing? Oh, let's go fishing. Like, that's how it was growing up. But
gotcha. Do you have siblings?
I do. I've got two older sisters.
Gotcha. Do they hunt too?
My oldest sister, she's obsessed with hunting. And
really?
Yeah. She's awesome. Yeah, she loves it. Like, and she's one of those, she's like the person that if she puts in for a tag, she's going to draw it no matter the odds.
Man, you know? I think there's something to that, because like my wife had never hunted ever, right? And then when my 12-year-old, when my oldest, when he turned 12, I needed to get him through hunter safety. And so I had my wife take hunter education with him. And the very first year that I applied the two of them, so they finished hunter's ed, and I applied them a week later. And I see this credit card hit for an elk tag in Utah, and I was like so excited, because I knew for a fact it was my kid, you know. I was so excited. And the draw results come out, and it was my wife. She drew on her very first, I mean, she drew the Boulder elk on her very first application, having finished hunter's ed 1 week prior.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah, it's all downhill from there.
Sounds like your sister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's, yeah. My middle sister, she could care less, but my oldest sister, yeah, she's obsessed with it, and it's pretty cool. We get to hunt quite a bit up together. So
are you guys competitive with hunting?
We used to be, like, a lot. We used to be, and then she had kids, and it's now, you know, yeah. But
yeah, your priorities shift a little bit.
Just a little bit. Like, obviously we want to kill the biggest deer in the family, which I have now, so that's good. But
there you go. How big?
I'm sure he's like a low 80s buck, nothing good giant, but good buck. Yeah.
Good buck. Did your wife hunt at all?
My wife hunts a little bit if she's got a deer tag. If she doesn't have a tag, and she ain't going, type.
Right.
Yeah. So she wants to be she's either the trigger or she's sitting at home.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
She's pretty good to let you go though.
Oh, she's one of the most supportive people in my life. She's awesome that way. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
Very cool. I was looking at your Instagram page, and I saw a bunch of photos of hounds. It looked like you've been out running lions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that something that you're still doing?
No. 2 months ago, I got out of it. I was obsessed with it, though. Like, I still am. It's just where Utah's taking the lions. I obsessed my brain a little bit, and it made me too upset that it was taken away from other things.
Gotcha.
So I said I better step away for a little while, but eventually we'll get back in, I'm sure.
I wanted to ask you about, because we just had the DWR, we had Dax and Kent Hershey, who's the kind of the state research head. He's doing all the collar studies and stuff, but I was going to ask you, you know, what are your thoughts about this, you know, mountain lion removal from 6 different units in the state?
A little different than most people that probably listen to these podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a huge decline. I got back into it. So my dad had hounds for 15 years, and then I got so into sports that he had to get out because there was no time. And when I got back into it, even 6 years ago, like, you could find lions. Like, you could find lions. You could run a bear every time you're out. You could run a lion every time you go out. Mm-hmm. And then they opened it, you know, they passed that bill where you can just have a hunting license. You don't need a tag and stuff. And
yep,
we watched it decline like quick. Like, the three units that I hunted the hardest, which are closest to St. George. And I mean, they got whacked. But we also watched the deer herd decline just as fast. So, I mean, right. I don't know. Our, the best years of lion hunting were the best years of deer hunting. I feel like there's a correlation there. But
gotcha.
I'm also not a biologist, so.
No, it's like most things in management. I think it's a complex, you know, system. Obviously you're talking ecology and you're talking systems of wildlife and impacts on one, you know, due to some action on another. But, the hard part for me is like, I see it both ways. Like I almost sit exactly in the middle, you know what I mean? Like I love mule deer. I love hunting mule deer, and I'm sure you do too, right? I don't think I've never met a houndsman that doesn't love mule deer hunting. They love it just as much as anybody else, but they also won't, you know, love to hunt lions, and I totally get it. I don't know. I remember I brought this up on the podcast that I did with those guys. You know, I had an old houndsman. He's since passed, but he was a good friend and somebody I considered, you know, one of the most knowledgeable people that I've ever met. He spent more time out in the woods than anybody I knew, but he always made the claim that he thought, you know, if you had an older age class of lions, of males, you know, toms in a population, that in essence, they regulated the number of, you know, new lions that were, you know, being born and then kind of moving out to occupy new territories, because he said that they would defend a territory and they would kill any other young males, right?
Yeah.
That came into it. And I guess to me, it makes sense. Like I totally understand it. And then, you know, I brought it up before on that podcast, like I really genuinely respect houndsmen. Like I think the way of life and the craft and the amount of time and effort that they put into their dogs is incredible. They're some of the most hardy individuals I've ever met. Like when I hunted with those guys, I remember one time we ran a bear. I was on a bear hunt with him. We ran this bear off into a canyon, and we belled off into this big canyon because we couldn't get the mules down into it. And the bear ended up kind of picking its way up through the ledges and left the dogs at the base of the hill or of the cliff. But we gathered up the dogs and hiked out of there. And like these guys were in Wrangler jeans, chaps, cowboy boots, you know, rain gear tops. And like I couldn't keep up with them. Like these guys just flat out hiked me. And I was in good shape at the time, but I mean, it just goes to show you, these are like some of the most hardy individuals I know. And like, I just have a ton of respect for houndsmen. So like, I want to see that way of life preserved. And I want people that run hounds to have the opportunity to go out and do it. You know, on the flip side, I also understand that like the collar data is suggesting that maybe mountain lion predation is an issue or a bottleneck for mule deer herds. So it's like, there's some part of me that's like, yeah, I think maybe we ought to try it, but it's tough, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I see where they're coming from, but I don't know. The math doesn't make sense to me either. Like a deer a week, if you're thinking they're killing a deer a week, man, how many deadheads are you finding when you go for a walk if they killed a deer a week?
Sure.
Like, I haven't found very many, and I've hiked a lot of miles. And I mean, I've followed lion tracks for the last 6 years. And like, I mean, my first year of marriage 2 years ago, I hunted 160 days behind my dogs. Like,
wow,
that's just all I did. And it was, you know, it's hard to watch where it was down to what it is now. And that's kind of broke my heart. So I got out of it, but
sure.
I don't know. I don't know. So
hopefully
they picked my backyard too. So that was one of the units they picked, and that's
for sure.
You know, tipped it over. So
yeah, man, I feel it for houndsmen, you know, I totally get it. And I, you know, Dax Mangus is, in my opinion, like I went to college with that guy. I've had a lot of personal conversations with him, you know, beyond podcasts. And I remember, you know, I that guy's a mule deer guy. He's from St. George, Santa Clara area. And, you know, anytime I've ever had a conversation with him, like I genuinely get the feeling that he's trying to do the right thing by, you know, by what the data suggests. And he's trying to do the right thing, I think, for, you know, the state of mule deer and the state of Utah. And personally, like I get the feeling, and I hope I don't, you know, speak too much on his behalf, but I get the feeling like he does feel it for houndsmen. You know what I mean? Like he knows full well that it sucks for you guys.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a lot of buddies that are in it still, and I hear about it all the time.
How did you get into hound hunting?
So when my dad sold out, it broke my heart. And I said, as soon as I get money, I'm going to buy a hound dog. And my mom looked at me like I was the dumbest person she's ever seen in her life when I said that. And well, when COVID hit, I had all this free time. And I'm like, well, there's no better time than now. And I got a dog, and my dad actually helped me pay for him. And then I struggled a little bit, and a good buddy named Jared Higgins got me a good dog.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know Jared. What'd you pay for that first hound? Do you remember?
Oh gosh, I want to say it was like $2,500.
Wow.
Yeah.
As a pup?
No, it was. He was a 4-year-old high tan dog from up north.
Gotcha.
And he ended up being okay, but he just wasn't super fast, and so we didn't catch as many lines as we probably should have. Mm-hmm. And then Jared Higgins had this old dog, and he's like, dude, just come get him. So I went and hunted him, and then I bought him from Jared, and that's when everything kind of turned around and got my hands on another dog that changed my entire life, and he ended up getting killed at like 2.5 years old. And
by a lion?
Yeah. So we caught one on a ledge, and there was like a tree that grew out the side of it, and that cat was in the top, and my dog got swatted off of that and
killed him.
Yeah. So
that's a heartbreaker.
Oh yeah. Took the sails out of me for a minute, like the wind out of my sails there for a while. But
yeah. I've only been on one lion hunt, and pardon me if I've told this story before, anybody listen, but we hunted all day. We put this big lion up a tree, and he'd gone up like this big leaning dead Doug fir. And he was up in the top of it, but the guy I was with, his dogs had just enough bite and purchase on that tree that they could climb up in the tree. And so I think of the, I can't remember how many dogs, 5 I want to say we had, I think 3 or 4 of them were up in the tree with this lion, right? And he's like, you know, as soon as you get a shot, and I was bow hunting, he's like, as soon as you get a shot, and he's kind of open up, let's go ahead and get him taken. And so I shot the lion, and he immediately willed and started down the tree, and he's just, I'll never forget, like it's frozen in my mind, but he's running down the tree, and like as he's running, he's just like reaching out and grabbing dogs and just dropping them. And yeah, it was crazy, but I remember this one dog, little female, he grabbed her by the head and pulled her out and essentially just dropped her out of the tree. And luckily, you know, there was enough snow on the ground that it kind of pad the fall, and it was on a pretty deep slope. So I remember she hit and rolled, but her ears were pretty chewed up, but I ended up carrying her out in my backpack. But that was one of the most interesting days I've ever spent in the woods. But the cool thing about it, and I'll always tell anybody this, the best part about that entire hunt was just getting to see this guy interact with his dogs and just seeing the dogs work. It was so cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The dogs are the reason you do it.
For sure.
Any good houndsman will say that they're in it for the dogs. The bad ones, I guess, you know, the bad apples of the group are the ones that if they're not killing stuff, then they're not happy. They're not satisfied. But I think anything with dogs is fun. Like I'm itching to do something with dogs. And yeah, I don't know what, but that coyote dog and stuff has been kind of itching at me.
Yeah. Get you some greyhounds.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Probably not for a while, but
yeah. How many dogs is the most that you've had?
I had 12 at one point.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was way too many. I didn't need that many. I thought I was gonna be the best bear dog, hound dog guy in the West, and had all these dogs, and man, it just turned into a circus. So I went back down to 8, and 8 was like my sweet spot.
8's still a lot of dogs, man. That's a lot of dog food.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of dog food, but it seemed worth it when I was doing it.
Were you married at this time?
Yeah. When we got married, I had 8. Gotcha. I had 8. And I got to 6 just from, you know, things happening. And then I got down to 4 and added a puppy. And then I was like, you know what? This not being able to find stuff to run and the dogs kind of sitting around, that's when it was, okay, it's a good time to get out.
Right. Well, man, I hope you get a chance to get back into it if that's what you want to do. And it's like I said, I hope Houndsman always exists. I hope they always get the opportunity to go out and do it, because I think it's such a cool endeavor, kind of a cool thing to chase, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If I get back in, it probably means we move to like Arizona or something where there's good lion and good bear population. But
right. Where, so Arizona, you bring up Arizona. Is there any other states? Like, is Nevada any good?
Nevada's pretty good. They're two tags a year, 365 mm-hmm. days a year. And so it gets beat pretty good.
Gotcha.
The nice thing about Nevada though, is there's like two big conjugated cities and then a bunch of little cities. So there's not as many people in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like you can find your pockets of lions, but then again, all your guys from Utah that aren't finding them are running to Nevada.
Right. Yeah. So. Spill over.
Yep. Yep. Colorado's still good. Mm. That's where my outfitter is. He's in Colorado, or my old outfitter. He's in Colorado.
Gotcha. Arizona's probably different, right? A little bit, because it's almost entirely dry ground stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those guys are just on the dirt, and that's where you make your dogs, is in the dirt.
Right.
Right. That's how you make a hound into a hound, is running stuff in the dirt. But
yeah, different animal, right? That can dry ground track.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's 100% nose work when it's in the dirt. When it's in the snow, a good dog will just smell it once and they'll run it with their sight. They won't even run it with their nose anymore. They'll just pick their heads up and run the track by sight until they run into the lion, and then it goes up a tree pretty quick after that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So that's awesome. Like I said, I hope you get to do it again. I wanted to, if you don't mind, I want to transfer over and talk about this bison hunt, because like I said, I've been itching to do this hunt, and I don't know if I ever will, so I do want to know, you know, what it was like.
Oh.
You originally hit me up. Let's talk your equipment first. You originally hit me up with some archery questions about, I think, stabilizers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What did you end up using as far as your bow setup?
I ran cutter stabilizers, so I ran a 12 out the front and a 10 out the back.
Gotcha.
And then I was running a Hoyt RX-9, the Ultra.
Yep.
And a Spot Hog Boonie.
Did you get a new bow for this hunt?
I did, actually. I was going to use my old bow, and it's only 3 or 4 years old. And my wife's like, hey, this is once in a lifetime. I'm like, do you want to shoot your old bow, or do you want to shoot a new bow more? And I was like, I want to shoot a new bow more.
Yep.
She's like, well, then go get yourself a new bow. So I went and bought myself a new bow.
Nice. But,
yeah.
What were you using? So Boonie sight, were you shooting 5 pins or single pin?
I shot their, it's a 3 pin, but they're adjustable.
Yep.
And they're vertical.
Yep.
And so it's a heavier sight, but I like shooting a vertical, and I don't want them to be stuck. I like to be able to have,
yeah,
you know, your 20, 30, 40 or whatever. So
yeah. What did you land on arrows and broadhead setup? Because that was one thing I was really curious about. I'm curious on like your total finished arrow weight, if you know it, and then, you know, broadhead selection, and if you made any changes there.
So I ran the Easton 4 mils, they're at the axis 4 millimeter.
Yep.
And then I had a 75 grain outsert, and I ran a 100 grain Sever 1.5 hybrid.
Okay. A mechanical on a bison.
Yeah. Yeah. I threw it back and forth so much between like a mechanical and, and a fixed, and talking to a few guys, it's like, man, you just want them to bleed. Like, you want them to bleed, because if they're not bleeding, you're not going to find them, because they're so tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into that with elk too. Like, I shot an elk in 23 with a fixed, and he didn't bleed at all. I found him 2 days later, and I hit him good, but he didn't bleed. And he was just tucked in a corner where I walked by him a couple times.
Dang.
And so, yeah, so I was talking to, Jace Guyman, actually. He killed a big bull on the Book Cliffs, and he used a mega meat. Like, he used a giant head. And he was only running like 420 grains. My arrow, because I'm almost shooting a full shaft because my draw length's 32 inches.
No way. How tall are you?
I'm 6'4".
Oh man, you're a big dude.
Yeah. So I overshoot a full length, but I'm shooting 500 and I think it was 513 grains was my total weight.
Okay. So you're probably 280 something feet per second, 290.
I was shooting 307.
Oh man, are you pulling 80?
Yeah, I'm pulling 80. It's like 81 and a quarter or man, something like that.
That's a ton of kinetic energy.
Yeah. I've always been at 80. I don't know why. I should probably back it down to 70 just to make it more fun to shoot. But
might save your shoulders in the long run. But I don't. The whole weight debate's kind of fun. People like to get real passionate about it. I don't care. Like I don't. If somebody can pull 80 or 90 and you can do it over and over and over again, go for it. You know.
Yeah.
I can't. I know that for a fact. I'm not very strong. I haven't been to the gym in forever and ever, but I know I can't pull 80, so I shoot 70. And even for a number of years, I actually hunted at 60 and had no problem killing elk with it. But yeah, it's that's always a fun one on the internet and social media. People get pretty wound up about draw weight.
Yeah, it's funny. I'll never shoot 90. I don't have a desire to go any heavier. I was a speed nut there for a long time, so that's why I shot 80.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, man, I'm giving up too much kinetic energy. Like, let's make a heavier arrow, and let's freaking get some pass throughs. And
yeah, speed's great, but if you don't have the the stiffness of the arrow and kind of the weight of it to push on through, you're just begging for shafts to break, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're begging for problems. So that's sounds like a solid bow setup. I mean, for bison, I mean you're definitely pushing way more energy than needed. I am curious at the end of this. I want to hear like, what was the impact like? You know, did you get a pass through?
I didn't actually. The angle that I shot him at, there was just no way it was going to go through. Like,
gotcha.
Yeah, and those shoulders when you open those suckers up, oh my gosh, like
huge.
Yeah, they're huge. They're huge.
Yeah. So are you okay of saying what unit you drew?
Yeah, I drew the Henry's. It was a Henry's tag.
Very cool. Was it a bull tag or a cow tag?
It was a hunter's choice, so I could kill either.
Gotcha. Archery?
Yep, archery.
How many years did it take you to draw that tag?
I got lucky. I drew it with 12 points.
Man.
Yeah.
I need some of that in my life.
You know what's funny is I ran into a guy that got the turn back tag and he had 8 points and I thought I was lucky.
I've had one once in a lifetime species tag in Utah and I had mountain goat and that's what I started applying for way back when. And it took me 18 years to draw it and 2 years actually I was in the top point pool, for the number of permits that they had, but I was like the odd guy out. So if they had 2 permits, there would be 3 applicants with max points and I'd be the odd one out. So I did that for 2 years in a row before I finally drew with max points. So I'm not too hopeful with my bison apps, but I think I'm at like 6 or 7 at this point. So maybe someday I'll get a chance, but I doubt it.
Yeah. It's funny. I told my dad when I drew it, it was, pandemonium. Like, holy shit. I can't believe I just drew that tag. Yeah. And it was actually like not even the best tag my family drew, which is kind of funny. My mom drew her elk tag and ended up turning it back in. But
wow,
it was crazy. And his whole thing is like, oh, I'm just going to keep buying points until I'm like up there and I can draw it. And I'm like,
no way.
You can't draw unless your name's in the hat. Like you better keep your name in there. And yeah, I got really lucky and drew that tag.
Yeah, 50% of those permits are randomly allocated. So, I mean, it's the same way in a lot of other states, and every year people will be like, well, can I just do points only? And I'm like, you can. But the only reason you should do that is if you just don't have the money or the time off, because otherwise you gotta at least have your name in the hat for a random permit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you?
I'm putting in for the best of the best elk because it's like, if I draw it, I'm going to figure out how to get down there and hunt it. But I'm not going to be too aggressive until I have time and everything else.
Right. Do you remember where you were or how you, when you found out that you drew the tag, or did you check your credit card statement or did you get the email?
Actually I was getting home from work and my buddy from, well, you, I think you've ran into him a couple times in Cedar, but he calls me and he's like, "Hey man, I drew my limited entry elk tag, an archery elk tag." And I'm like, "Oh, sweet." Like, I didn't even know that, you know, the draws were coming out. He's like, "Oh no, you can sneak into the app and you can see your points are gone and blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Yeah, it's not even worth me checking. Like, I'm not planning on drawing anything." And he's like, "No, I'll just do it." So I went in there and I was like, "Oh, unsuccessful on general deer, unsuccessful on my limited entry." I just like put my phone away. I was kind of like, "Yeah, whatever." And then he's like, "Oh, what about once in a lifetime?" I'm like, "Dude, I'm not going to check." Like, screw that. Like, I already didn't draw the two I was expecting to draw. And he's like, "Oh, dude, just check." So I checked. And, oh, I about dropped my phone. I was freaking out. I hung up on him and instantly called my dad. I'm like, "Dad, I drew a freaking buffalo tag." And yeah, it was funny. And then my wife got home from work, had no idea how exciting it was until I was like, "Oh, we're going to dinner. We're going to celebrate. I just drew a buffalo tag."
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's always a fun question to ask people, like, who's your first phone call? Because you really find out who somebody is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you really want to know where you fit in somebody's priority list, you know, when they draw a permit, you'll know. If you're their first phone call, you're way up on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no joke.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Did you do you know much about bison in the state of Utah as far as, like, the history of them or anything like that?
So I had no clue. Like, you're 12 years old and your parents are like, "Hey, what do you want to put in for?" And it's like, "Oh, the biggest one that you possibly can. Let's shoot a bison," you know?
Right. Yeah.
And you have no idea. But then once you start, you know, you draw the tag, the first thing you do, you start looking at videos, looking at, you know, stuff like that. Like, where do you shoot them? How do you, like, you know, stuff like that. And I know the Henrys is like the only herd that actually survived everything. Like, when they were trying to wipe them off the face of the earth, it was like the only herd of bison that are like naturally occurring, not like planted.
Yeah. So the way I understand it is that Utah was never like primary habitat, but there was definitely bison throughout the state of Utah, like in the valley bottoms and, you know, various areas. And then you had settlers moved west. They were essentially extirpated, you know, killed off in the state of Utah. And then I think what they did is reestablish them with stock from like the Yellowstone herd. And yes. I think at one point Yellowstone got down to like 25 bison total. Oh, so, geez. Yeah. And so, but it's interesting is I know that, you know, the state of Utah, that bison herd on the Henrys, and then, you know, they've obviously translocated bison over onto the Book Cliffs, and then you have kind of that nursery herd that they maintain on Antelope Island. But my understanding is that, like, that Henrys herd is one of the most genetically pure herds of bison ever, you know, remaining.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. It's like you're actually hunting, you know, plains bison that would have been here all those years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And don't let them fool you by saying plains, because they're not in the plains.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I was curious. That was one thing I wanted to ask you about was, did you do much scouting for this hunt, or did you just do a lot of, you probably know Trevor Thompson, don't you, from down there?
Oh, yeah. I talked to Trevor quite a bit. When I found out I drew it, he was like the second dude I talked to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I talked to him and Brett Guyman. And Jace Guyman, and then JT Robbins. I don't know if you knew JT Robbins, but
I know the name.
I was talking to all of them, and they're like, "Yeah, if you got the time and you want to go over there and look around, you can, but it's a waste of time. Like, there's 5 cow hunts in front of you."
You're right.
And yeah, so it's like, you might go find them, yeah, but they're not going to be anywhere close when you get over there. And so life just kind of sped up. I never even made it over there till the day before opening day.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even bother. Like, mostly just, I didn't want to be frustrated. Like, yeah, man, they were here. They were here. And now they're 30 miles away or 40 miles away somewhere else. And so I was like, I'm just going to find them where they are, and I'm going to go kill one.
Are they that nomadic?
Oh, so, I'll start, like, opening day. We drove up there and we didn't see anything except for there's a herd at like 11,000 that you can see like every day. And there's usually no bulls. They're all cows.
Cows.
Which is crazy. Like, why the hell are you all the way at 11,000 feet?
They got to be belly deep in snow, huh?
Oh, there was no snow. I drove to 11,000 feet in a truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was another thing when I drew it. Trevor's like, well, I hope you have snowmobiles and you're in good shape, because the hardest thing about that hunt is getting around. Hmm. And I got lucky this year. It's luck, but it's also like kind of depressing, like you were saying, like there's no snow, but
it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found a bull, I don't know, 5 hours into opening day, and he was too far away that I couldn't make a move that day. So I was going to come back the next morning, and I was actually solo, but had horses on call just in case I killed one. And
is he all by himself?
Yeah. He was with three cows, and then he was hanging out, and gotcha. I walked in there the next morning, and they had gone 26 miles to a spring, and I glassed them up in the spring, and from where they were to that spring was like the way to get there. There's only one way off this bluff, and it was 26 miles. They did it in like 8 hours.
No way.
Yeah, so we went back up on top where we were glassing from, and we glassed up a lone cow that had her nose in the ground. She was trailing them, and we watched her for 4 hours, and she made it like almost all the way to them. It was like the craziest thing you've ever seen.
Just lined out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no stopping on them either. Like, yeah, they're crazy. We kept saying they're the dumbest, smartest animals on the mountain.
Do they have kind of like a home range that they return to, or are they just traveling that far to water and then they're coming back to kind of the feeding area and a bedding area?
So from what I learned and what I was told is when there's no pressure, they have like their areas, like you can drive and see them every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But once pressure hits, you're either going to find them at the top or you're going to find them all the way in the bottom where you got to get horses in there.
And gotcha.
So, yeah, it was... there's no rhyme or reason, it seems.
Yeah, I was reading that they're pretty fast too. Like, I didn't know a bison could run like 35 miles per hour. Like they can cruise.
yeah. So my wife's cousin, his grandpa, so I don't know, like it's married in anyways, it's all roundabout anyways, he drew the cow tag in December.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had something to go off of, like pins from them where they had seen some.
Gotcha.
And he killed one that was on the, he shot one and she was running. And I'm like, that's, yeah, they were, yeah, they're fast. They're really fast.
So you see this bull, he's 26. How far away did you glass him from? I mean, so, I assume you can see a ton of country.
Yeah. So I glassed him from like 3.5 miles opening morning. And then we didn't find him until... So I walked in, never turned them up, cut their tracks. They were heading off into a place I didn't want to go unless I had horses. So I bailed back out and walked to the top and glassed him up. And he was probably 4 miles. But from where he started to where he was, it was like 20-something miles. It was That's crazy.
Wild.
Yeah.
So were you able to make a play on him that day then?
No. There was no way getting in there unless we drove about... There's like a 2.5 hour drive and then walk up from the bottom, which would have been like an 8 mile walk, 8 mile hike.
Gotcha. Were you seeing other bison as well? Or were you just like, this is the bull?
So talking to Taylor Albrecht, he's an outfitter too.
Yep.
He said, yeah, you know, Taylor, he was saying that there's a bull that was going to be like high buck bull. And that's the bull that we had found. So he was like our target bull.
Gotcha.
And you know, you turn him up opening morning, you're thinking, oh man, we're going to get embedded and I'm going to go walk in there and shoot him. It's pretty easy, right? No. Mm-hmm. He ended up actually, so we brought horses, and that's Jared Higgins and mm-hmm. Brett Guyman brought horses, and JC Wilson, him was there too. And they brought horses and we rode in there. We did like 20 something miles on horses. And then we turned up one cow all day.
No way.
Yeah, it was, at the end of it, I was like, man, I would have rather have hiked that than ride these horses.
Are you pretty saddle sore?
Oh, everybody was. Yeah. Higgins rides a horse like every day. And he's like, man, I might just get off and walk back to the trucks.
Dude, I've been on horses a little bit, but I'm like not a good rider by any means. I remember one time going out with these guys, and we were on a bear hunt actually. And at one point, we kind of jumped across this wash, and the guy out ahead of me, he was sitting there in the saddle as I came through, and he was just laughing. And he turned around and he goes, "All I'll say about your ability to ride a horse is it's a good damn thing that that saddle has a horn on it." Because I was just glued to that saddle horn, because that thing was just, you know, trying to keep up with the other horses and the mules and stuff. Like, oh, yeah. That thing tried to scrub me off on every bush, dude. I was just, like, locked onto the saddle horn.
Oh, yeah.
Gave those guys a good laugh. But, man, saddle sore is a whole other thing, huh? You climb out, like, one of the sorest days I've ever been is, like, after riding all day with those guys. And it's just because I'm soft.
Yeah, when we got back to the truck, it was starting to get dark. And they're like, "Well, you know, tomorrow's the day you're going to find your bull, and you're going to have to go hike in there and kill him because he can barely walk." And that's actually what happened. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah. The next morning.
So were you by yourself? Morning,
yeah. No, I had Logan Erickson. Mm-hmm. He stayed with me like, I don't know, the first 4 days, and then he came back out for another 3 days. And so those guys stayed, and it was supposed to snow, so they obviously had hound dogs, and they were going to go catch a lion. But
right. Yeah, priorities, right?
Right, yeah. Once in a lifetime, you can go catch a lion, you know, let's go catch a lion. But
yeah. So is this the second day or the third day that you finally get on it?
Oh, so that was – so the first – this was like day 10 when I finally
got. Oh, no way.
Yeah, so there was a lot of in-between. So I'd found a bull opening morning, went in to try and kill him day two, turned him up day three, couldn't make a play. Day four, went and found other bison. They were all cows on the top of, it's called Pinnell, all the way to the top. And we thought there was a bull, and we sat there for 3 hours, and I couldn't say that there was a bull there. So we left. I came home actually for a couple of days and then turned around and burned back up there. And I hunted for 3 days. I turned up a bunch more cows, just no bulls, maybe one younger bull. I had a cow at 25 yards. I could have killed her. And I don't know.
Tempting?
It was tempting. Yeah, I came to full draw. I was going to shoot her. And then I was like, the hunt's, I think, 17 days.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dude, I got 10 days left. Like, I want a bull.
And for sure.
I passed her, and then it was a couple days of just covering country trying to turn something up, which is crazy. You would think that, I mean, they're 1,500 pounds. You should glass them up pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
They're harder than mule deer. Like,
to glass?
Oh, yeah. I would bet you go sit on that mountain with a guy that can find a mule deer and say, "Hey, go find buffalo," unless they're at the top, obviously, when they're in the open. I mean, you're glassing the back of burnt trees, and we're sitting there with, you know, a 95 and some 15s and all these optics, and you're sitting there for 3-4 hours, and all of a sudden one turns sideways and you're like, "Oh, there's one."
No,
it's been
way
standing there.
I wouldn't have thought that, but then, I mean, mule deer, like, I don't know you'd ever find one if they didn't have a white ass, right?
Right.
But, yeah, bison, I can see the color of a bison for sure. I can see them blending in, but, man, they're such a big animal, you'd think they'd pop right out.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big learning curve glassing them up.
Yeah, I bet. Are you seeing tracks and stuff?
Yeah, so there's tracks down in the desert, and funny enough, we actually, the morning that I killed my bull, it was dumping snow. You couldn't see 200 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just going to honestly hang out and just drive around. And if we cut fresh tracks, we'll walk it out and see what it is. But, we were headed to a glassing spot, and, Brett called us and was like, "Hey dude, we just cut a big bull track. Like, you should come walk it out." I'm like, "All right." And so we turn around and we're going, and they're like, "Oh, we found them. There's four of them. They're all cows." I'm like, "Okay, never mind. We'll leave it." He's like, "But there's a solo track that's huge. You need to come walk it out." So we turn around again, and we walked it out, and there's a giant range bull, like not even a bison. This, you can't tell the difference. I don't know if there is a difference. I honestly couldn't tell you. But
right, just a big free range bull.
Yeah, looking at us, and I'm like, what are you doing at 11,000 feet? There's no other cows. There's just a lone range bull, and we gave Brett so much shit for that. It was like, you sucker. But
that's funny.
He made up for it though. He found four cows and was like, there's more in there, go check them out. And my bulls ended up being in that group. But
is it hard to tell the difference between, you know, the cow and the bull? I would assume like at distance it might be, but when you actually get in there and you get into the heat of the moment, what were they together when you got in tight?
Yeah. So my bull was with 14 cows and one younger bull.
Gotcha.
And when you're glassing up cows together, like, and there's no bull,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to tell if they're a bull or a cow when you haven't looked at enough buffalo.
For sure.
But when you see a bull next to cows, it's like, yeah, that's a bull. Like, it's no doubt.
Just body size?
Body size. Their head size is a lot different. Hmm. Their shoulders are a lot bigger. I'll send you a video of my bull on the hoof. And he's standing next to a full-grown cow, and it's just, it's not comparable.
Right, just that much bigger.
Yeah, they're that much bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. So did you, take me to the day you actually killed it. So he found a lone track, and is that what you did, is just start tracking it out?
No, so the lone track ended up being that.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, the Angus. Right, yep.
But the morning of, it was dumping snow, so they were taking off to go try and find a lion, and we had kind of a game plan to go glass a canyon that you'd have to hike into to even see.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured they'd be in there because we weren't, like, we turned them up, I don't know, day four or five in there. And Brett and Higgins and JC were all driving up this kind of switchback, and they're like, hey, man, there's bison here, like, you got to go check them out. We could tell that there was four cows, but there's a bunch more in there. And so we went over right to their pin, and Logan jumped out, and he's like, hey, I'm just gonna poke my head over and just see, like, if they're still there. And he takes off, like, he's like running up the road to go poke his head over the top, because we're pretty excited, like,
mm-hmm.
I hadn't put a stock on anything since that cow, so it's been like 6 days.
Ugh.
And he pokes his head over and he hits the ground. And he turns white and he starts running back to the truck. He's like, dude, they're right there, like 90 yards. I'm like, no way. Like, you're lying. And so we grab spotters and we pop over the top again. They're like at 200 yards. And
wow. And
we're watching them feed. And I'm like, dude, that's a bull. Like, that's a good bull. Like,
mm-hmm.
I need to go shoot that bull. And on our way over there, funny enough, we cut a lion track.
No way.
Yeah, so we cut a lion track. So I'm calling him. I'm like, hey, dude, we got a lion track. You should come run it. And I'm like, hey, if this bull beds down, like, I'm going to run underneath him and I'm going to shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that, and he literally beds down behind a tree. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to go shoot this bull. And I'm like, hit those guys on the radio and tell them, hey, don't turn the dogs loose until we say so. And no sooner did I say, don't turn the dogs loose, they turned 50 freaking hound dogs out. And they're blowing up this canyon, like 300 yards from this bull.
Right.
And none of the bison even cared, like, at all. Like,
didn't even react to it.
No, like, at all. And it's, so I'm like, well, I'll just wait for them to, like, they're going to move that track pretty quick. It's 30 minutes old. They're going to get it caught pretty quick. And once we couldn't hear the last dog, I just grabbed my bow and I got the wind right. It was blowing like 30 miles an hour. And I got to it. I was like, if I get to that tree underneath him, that's probably 50 yards and I'll shoot him right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I snuck down in there and he was still bedded and a couple cows were standing up feeding. And I got to that tree and I realized I'm way closer than 50. Like, I'm more like 25, 30 yards. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, maybe even closer. So I grabbed my sight and I crank it to 20. And I'm like, I'm just going to wait until he stands up. And I can't shoot with a puffy jacket on because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going to slap and
slap.
Just bad stuff happens. So I'm sitting there with two shirts and a jacket on and I'm starting to shiver. I'm like, I got to do something. I got to get this bull to stand up because I'm going to die of cold right here.
Yeah.
And so I just stood up and I yelled at him. I was like, hey. And the cows kind of perked up and he did nothing. And I screamed again and he started getting up. So I came to full draw and he kind of like shook off. And I, after that, it kind of like a flow state, you know, you just kind of.
Yeah.
Is he
quartering away from you?
Yeah. So he's slightly quartering, but he's directly uphill. Like I'm shooting.
Like what kind of angle uphill?
Oh, I don't know. It was steep. Like,
oh, really? But only like 25 yards.
Yeah, yeah. So gotcha. I put
still a hard shot.
Yeah, so I put my 20-yard pin underneath his, right underneath his armpit, and everything just—I mean, it felt so good. Like,
yeah, clean break.
Oh, clean everything. Like my pin was rock salt settled. I was in my anchor good. My back wall, just everything was perfect.
Do you remember? Do you remember like seeing him through your sight housing and like the pin on him and everything, or did you kind of black out? Because that's sometimes I do that.
What's funny is like everything but what was in my peep was black. Like,
yeah, yeah, you're focused.
Yeah, like I can't tell you like what he's doing with his head. I couldn't, but I remember my pin settled right underneath his, like right up in his armpit. And you're supposed to shoot him really low because everything sits low on a bison.
Yep.
And it went, it buried Fletchings deep and it hit his offside shoulder and it stopped. And then he took about 15 steps. Like he didn't even take off. He just like kind of slowly walked. So I kind of ran up the hill and I got another shot in him at, I don't know, 40, maybe 50 yards. And that was quartering again. And I took both lungs and he laid down and died right there. It was probably a minute and a half between my first shot and
when he died. Right in front of you?
Yeah, right in front of me.
Isn't that a crazy experience?
It was the most incredible experience I've ever had on the mountain. It was crazy.
Have you ever had that happen before in any other animal?
No, I've watched them die, but I've never had them like, usually, you know, you hit a mule deer and they take off. You hit an elk and they, you know, they get out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he knew what happened. Like,
yeah,
he was either tired or I don't know what was going on, but.
I've had a few animals that I've had that happen where, you know, I've executed a shot and they didn't really quite know what happened. They basically just stood there in front of me and, you know, I got to watch that entire process and like watch them die. And it's different than when they run off, you know what I mean? And you pick up a blood trail, like actually standing there and watching the animal expire is, and I talked about it on this other podcast we did. I killed an elk this year in Arizona. Same thing. Like I watched him die in front of me, and it's just different, man. Like I felt good, but then I also felt like this kind of heavy sense of sadness. You know, it was just like way heavier, way deeper than it usually is when the animal goes off and you don't get to watch that whole process.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was like a good and bad thing because I'd heard. Like I've seen videos where the guy shoots them 4 or 5 times and then they watch him die. And it was good knowing that like he died in like a minute. Like it was, he'd be lucky if from the first shot till he was dead was a minute.
Yeah. As quickly and cleanly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was everything I would hope for in like my shot process and everything and where the arrow actually hit. So it was as perfect.
It must be. I mean, I don't know. The only word that jumps to my mind is like, it must be pretty gnarly walking up on an animal that big.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You prepare yourself for it. And then when you get on them, you're like, holy, like where do you even start? Like,
right.
Like, and where we were, it was so steep. Like we were just shy of 10,000 feet.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't know why in my mind I didn't have this pictured this way. Do you know what I mean? Like a bison hunt like that on the Henrys or the Book Cliffs. Like I just didn't picture this like super mountainous hunt, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I always dreamed of shooting them in like the Cedars. Like,
yeah.
Down there where there's like, you know, just little bluffs and
kind of bad landing. Cedars.
Yeah. But no, we were at 10,000 we're just right under 10,000 feet and we had to get paracord and tie them up so we wouldn't slide to the bottom or else it would have really sucked. But
for sure, what's the process of breaking one of those down like? How long did it take you?
So there was 4 of us and it took us, I don't know, 4 hours.
Man,
but I mean, that's I mean, that's between, I don't know. We took so many pictures.
Like, for sure, as you should.
You know, like we started a fire and me and Logan, it was actually just me and Logan when I killed him. And we started a fire and we sat there for, I don't know, 3 hours. Like,
just enjoying it.
Oh yeah. I was even talking to him. Like, I don't even want to touch him. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to sit here and soak it in. Cause I mean, I never get to do it again. For He'll sure. never do it. Cause he's not even putting in for bison. Like, I don't know anybody else.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this might be my only chance to actually hunt this mountain with this tag.
Yeah. That animal. And well, I mean, yeah. what an incredible animal. Just that, like the history of bison in this country. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's an incredible experience, incredible animal. There's just like so much history tied up between, you know, the Americas and bison. Just cool.
Oh yeah.
Just neat.
Yeah, no, it's a different feeling for sure.
What did you have kind of an idea before the hunt, like what you want to do with it? Like as far as like, are you going to mount do like a shoulder mount, or did you decide you were going to do a rug and then just do like a Euro on the skull?
Yeah, so I always wanted to do a kind of a backpack style. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And then after breaking him down, I'm like, I'm shoulder mounting this sucker. Like it's way too cool. And Calvin Ferguson,
oh yeah, one of my Calvin best well.
Friends. Yeah. Yeah. One of my best friends worked for him. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, dude, what can we do? I want the Euro too. Like I want to, mm-hmm. and so we're going to do a Euro and they're going to cast the horns or have a replica made and put it on his shoulder.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm pumped. I can't wait.
And then did you keep the rest of the hide?
So I probably took 90% of the hide.
Yeah, that's so neat. Dude, I've heard their hide. I had a buddy one time I used to work with, and he said that he went on a bison hunt, and he said that their hair is like so coarse, especially like around their face, that he was working with his hands, and it like made his hand sore over time because he's like, man, their hair is just like so wiry.
I believe it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is. I had 3 MKC knives and all 3 were dull by the time I got the cape off.
Jeez.
Like you couldn't cut meat off of him with them. That's how dull they were once That's I was crazy. Done with the cape.
Do you know approximately like how much meat you pulled off that in pounds? It's gotta be 400-500 pounds maybe, I would think. I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably like 3.
Yeah, it is. They say like a big bull elk somewhere between like completely boned out is like around, you know, 180 to 200, 210 maybe.
Yeah.
So you would think a bison might be, yeah, 300, I guess. That would make sense. It's just so much meat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'd honestly argue that a big bull elk has more meat. Mm. I would argue it. The whole hump is all bone. Like there's nothing, there's no meat there. And the back straps are probably half as long as a bull elk. The hind ends are, I mean, there's a lot of meat there, yeah. But the shoulders just didn't have, I mean, I was telling my wife, she's like, how much do you think we got? And I'm like, not as much as I expected, but it's a lot.
Enough. It'll feed us.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
how does it eat? Is it pretty good?
Yeah, we had the tenderloins, I don't know, 2 nights ago, and it's really good. It's
That's
really
awesome.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, the rest of it's hanging. We're gonna hang it for a while.
Really? Yeah, yeah. So when I was gonna ask you, like this just happened, right? Like how are we what, 2 weeks, a week?
It happened, I don't know, it was Saturday, so the what, 20?
Yeah.
Shoot, yeah, like
10 days.
Less than a week. Yeah, less than a week ago, the 24th of January is when I killed him.
So crazy. Are you still riding on kind of a high?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I can go slay a dinosaur if I wanted to.
That is the one thing about a hunt like that, man. When you work really hard for it and you kind of hope and dream about it and, you know, it goes your way and you do it and it's hard, you come home from that just feeling 10 feet tall, right?
Oh yeah, just hoping for tags now.
For sure. You know,
like I feel like I can capitalize on any tag after that hunt.
Yeah, I've had a few of those. I remember, I had a late archery tag. It was the first year I ever decided to do this hunt in Arizona. And I remember I'd called this guy that knew the unit pretty well. And the story goes, when I told him, hey, I have this late archery elk tag down here in this unit, I think one of the first things he said to me, he was like, why the hell would you put in for that? He's like, that's a terrible hunt. He's like, it's awful. He's like, it's so hard. It's so thick. He's just like, it's the success rates are terrible. And like, you know, it kind of put a chip on my shoulder at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I'll show you, you know? So I went down and ended up, I killed a pretty decent bull. But yeah, I remember after that hunt for sure, I came home from that. And then I was like paying attention to the, you know, the success rate the following year, just cause I wanted to see kind of where it fell. And I remember it was like 8 or 9% or something at that time. I think it's creeped up a little bit. People are starting to figure it out a bit more, but yeah, I remember thinking the same thing. I'm like, man, after that hunt, I could do anything. Like I'm the guy, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was funny. Cause I reached out to another outfitter,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, hey, you got any tips? And he's like, yeah, there's like 100,000 acres of public land on the Henrys and the bison are on 1% of it. Good luck.
Ugh. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, sweet. Like, sweet. And he's like, yeah, and there's 5 cow hunts in front of it. So you're going to be chasing, like, the worst time of year. And there's going to be snow. So good luck. I'm like,
that kind of thing is a blessing and a curse, right? I think for some people, it probably does just scare the shit out of them. And they're like, no thanks. You know, and think about maybe turning it in. There's some people that are just like, take that as a, like, not only is the hunt, I knew the hunt was going to be challenging, but now I feel like I have a chip on my shoulder, like I'm going to hunt it even harder.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I responded. I was like, I'm going to go kill one and I'll send you pictures.
Man, good for you. That's so cool.
So, yeah. I sent him a picture. I haven't heard back from him.
That's hilarious. Is Calvin going to do the mount?
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to do it.
I'll have to pop down there and see that.
Yeah. I actually just got a text that it's off to the tannery. So
yeah, he's funny. He hit me up maybe a week ago and he was like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a new bow. And he's like, would you help me set it up? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Like, all you got to do, you know, get the bow, the parts and pieces. If you need suggestions, you know, let me know. But yeah, I would love to like help you out. And he's like, oh, I'll trade you a mule deer mount for it because my kid, my 12-year-old, killed a pretty good buck this year that he wants to have mounted. And I was just like, dude, that's not an apples to apples. I'm like, it'll take me 3 hours max to like set the bow up and tune it and get you shooting it real well. And I'm like, it'll take you a hell of a lot longer to do a deer mount, you know?
Yeah, he's a great dude. I like Calvin.
Good. Long. Yeah, Calvin, Robin are awesome. They're some of my favorite people for sure.
No, they're awesome.
Yeah, I always I like to stop in there. Although if I do, I have to be careful about it because if I do, I'm there for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, just shooting the bull.
Oh yeah, and staring at everything that they have in there.
Isn't that fun?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love it. Jeff Baird's the same way. Like if I stop at his shop, I'm just there talking and looking at mounts for hours.
Oh yeah, Jeff's a stud too. I like him a lot.
Yeah, good dude. Yeah, again, another one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
Do you have tags this year that you're kind of hoping for?
I'm going to be super aggressive with my elk points in Utah. So,
okay.
Yeah, I've got some point. I'm debating honestly, but I've got plenty of dedicated points. So I'm going to try and get a dedicated tag too.
Nice, man. You're in for a solid year then.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a bunch of out of state points I want to burn, but we'll see kind of what Utah brings and see what I can get away with the family and stuff. So.
Yeah. That's one of the bonuses of having your dad, having been as involved in hunting as he was, it sounds like when you were a kid, is that he probably was applying you for places and building points for you before you even really realized what you had, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was good about it. There's some states that I give him crap because I'm like, hey, why didn't you put me in there? And it's like, well, I didn't hunt it, so you weren't going to either.
Yeah. But didn't have an endless budget.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Getting pricey for sure.
Yeah, like Nevada. I'm trying to make it worth putting in for Nevada, but I don't know.
Thing about Nevada, I don't know. Whenever I'll start to kind of crap on Nevada sometimes with the guys down there, and I mean it's primarily I look at it from, you know, the view that like what I really want there is an elk tag, right?
Yeah.
And, or a sheep tag would be great, but that's, you know, completely out of this world. But, What I really want is an elk tag. And usually when I get to complaining, it's usually about my elk odds. And then pretty shortly after, they're all like, well, how many Nevada tags have you had? And I'm like, well, let's see, I've had 2 deer tags and I've had 2 antelope tags. And I think I've got those in about 15 years, which actually isn't that bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Not bad. So, and that's really why I started bow hunting, was because I started looking at draw odds. And then I was working for the Forest Service, and I just thought, man, it's really fun to see all these animals out and about in their orange coats, you know, in the summer. And I was seeing animals, and I thought, man, if I can get first crack at them, I'm going to do that. So that's what really drew me to bow hunting in the first place. But I think if you're willing to, like, apply for archery hunts, you know, and you can come up with the money, it's decent. You can still pick up some antelope tags and some deer tags.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just want an elk tag in Nevada.
That's me. You and me both.
You know, I just want as many elk tags as I can get. But
yeah, is that your favorite, would you say?
Yeah, yeah. If I had hounds, I'd tell you it's my third favorite. But now that I don't, yeah. Elk, yeah. There's nothing like a big elk.
Yeah. But you did you kill a big bull here a few years ago? I saw on your Instagram page.
Yeah, yeah, I killed like a 360-ish bull a couple years ago.
Where's that bull out of?
Utah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. I don't like to talk about him very much, but yeah. Okay. He's from Utah.
Well, we don't have to.
Yeah. That one was, I probably got luckier on him than I did on drawing this bison tag. So
it happens, man. And that's the thing, is if you got your name in the hat, somebody's going to draw it, right?
Yeah. 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 It wasn't a draw tag, but yeah.
Oh, fair enough. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yep.
Very, very cool. Well, man, I really appreciate you talking to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to hear your bison story, because like I said, it's a pipe dream for me, and it's just fun to hear about, you know, people's hunts and their experiences, and I don't know, it gets me fired up for application. And it's just like the what if, right? Like, I know that I can't let my expectations get high, because then I'm just disappointed, and it just pisses me off when I get my unsuccessful, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I can't get too high on my expectations, but it is fun to just always have that kind of in the back of your head, like, just maybe this year I'll draw.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with my elk points in Utah. Like, do I just go get a tag that I know I can get, or do I throw my name in the hat and hope to get lucky again? You know?
Well, I mean, the thing is like, you're not that old if you just graduated in like 2018, right?
Yeah, I'm 26.
Gotcha. So you've got some time. I mean, you could think about it, and, you know, you got some options, and that's the cool thing about it. But I don't know. Yeah. I'm always of the opinion that, like, if you can draw a tag, you know, there's, like, no guarantees. Like, even on a limited entry tag, I've always said this. Like, I've had three or four limited entry elk tags in Utah, and every year when I've drawn one, I've thought, oh, I'm going to go out here and, you know, hang the moon. But it's not that way. It's a hard elk hunt. Every elk hunt I've ever been on is a tough elk hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because it's limited entry doesn't make it easy. That's for sure.
No, and it definitely doesn't make it easy for a big bull, you know?
No. Yeah. And I've killed 2 bulls over 330. So it's like,
yeah,
if I'm going to draw this tag, I want to be chasing that upper. And I'm cool with eating tags. Like, I'm not.
Yep.
I'm not. I've got plenty of meat and stuff, so it's not, you know. But, yep. Yeah, it's all just a toss your name in the hat, I guess.
For sure.
That's cool, man. Do you think Brady's going to hate me for saying all these states? Or, I mean, I know he doesn't know me, but I think he's going to.
I don't think we care, do we?
No, I guess not.
The more he goes in on that stuff, the more I like to feed into the other side of it, right? Just to get under his skin a little bit. Everybody's cut a little different. You know, it's funny. I tell people, like, I'm pretty open, right? Yeah. And, you know, people ask me, like, where I've killed a buck or a bull, like, even down to the unit, and I'll tell them the unit. And there's been a lot of times, to be honest, where people have asked me, you know, like, specific questions, like, oh, you know, were you in this area? And I'll just tell them outright, because, I mean, you know how hunters are, is, we're all so secretive about our spots that I think most everybody assumes that the other person is lying. Like, yeah. no good hunter would ever actually tell you where they killed an animal, right? And it's kind of fun to play mind games with folks so that when I answer the question, they're like, is that actually where he killed it? Or is he just telling me that, you know, because he's a hunter and he would lie to me anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
and it's easier to keep it straight in my mind if I just tell people the truth. But I'm throwing that out there, just telling people, you know, mind games are fun to play with folks sometimes. So,
So it's funny because I ran into quite a few guys on this bison hunt, and they were all about giving information. And we're competing with each other, right? Like we're on the same mountain trying to chase the same bulls. And I mean, there's only five tags, but like I ran into two other tag holders, and they were all about like, yeah, man, we saw bulls here, we saw bulls there. If you need help, please call. Like we're all for it, and it was awesome.
It makes it a fun experience, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like when you run into people and you're not like gun shy to run into them because you think, oh, I'm about to have, you know, that awkwardness of running into another hunter. When people are just cool about it, man, it's fun. It makes the experience so much better.
So much better, yeah. And I just think, you know, just talk, man. It's not, you know, if I need help, I'm gonna ask. You know?
Sure.
I'm not gonna say about, you know, hey man, yeah, I saw. There's a guy that asked me if I'd come and help him this weekend because it closes tomorrow.
Mm.
And I gave him my number. I was like, hey, if I'm around for another day or two, I'll come and glass for you. I'll walk you into something if I ended up killing. And then I ended up killing the day I was supposed to leave. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a believer in karma too, man. I think that stuff comes back around.
Absolutely.
You know, I think if you're a little bit more willing to be, you know, friendly, offer up some information or help if you can. I think, at least in my experience, when I have done that, I felt like it comes back around tenfold. So, I'm trying to. I need all the help I can get. So I'm trying to put that karma out there.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, all right, man, I appreciate your time. I'm sorry about all the technical difficulties. We tried to schedule this a couple different times and had some issues and obviously some tech issues today, but I appreciate your time and effort. And I was just super excited when I saw your message and saw the bison that you killed. And then now having heard about how difficult it is, like I'm even that much more stoked for you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on too.
Yeah, I appreciate it.